Parshas Pinchas, Tafshin Ayin. So our theme today is the concept of the transition that begins to take place now in this parsha of responsibility to Klal Yisrael themselves to go forward from this point and bear the name, the banner, really, of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, carry Hashem's name on our shoulders through our national existence, how we enter our land, set up our country, our national institutions, our religious institutions, how we run our society. We were meant to become an Or LaGoyim, not necessarily going out and doing outreach, but just by existing the way we were supposed to exist. That in and of itself would be impressive and enough to bring people from everywhere close to us and close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The truth is, even today, the reason that organizations have to go out and do Kiruv is because the Jewish community does not always speak for itself. If we lived according to the Torah in all its ways, our lifestyle would be so extraordinary, so impressive. They would just say, look at the Jews. And you wouldn't have to do one bit of outreach. You know, but unfortunately, we do have beautiful communities. Yes, that's true, fortunately. And we do have beautiful institutions. But we're not perfect. And that's why you still have to teach people that despite the imperfection of the Jewish individuals, the Torah itself is true and perfect. And the Torah lifestyle is of great value, etc., of utter ultimate value. But that's really our national existence should speak for itself. So we're beginning to transition here. The last of the catastrophes was the Benos Moav incident, which we spoke about last week, and now it's time to proceed into Eretz Yisrael. And we're going to see in this week's Parsha that things start to proceed, and then all of a sudden there's a couple of topics thrown in that could really belong somewhere else. And our question is, why are they here? What's the theme that the Parsha is being built? And of course, building for us, and of course that will tie us into Shavasar B'Tammuz and the 3 weeks and Tisha B'Av and all of that. Because what the Shavasar B'Tammuz, and by the way, it's not really 3 weeks, it's 22 days. That's why it's never called the 3 weeks in our literature. It's called Ben HaMetzarim. We call it the 3 weeks, but it's really 22 days. But in any case, this time period is when what we were starting right here in this week's parsha, the transition into setting up our own society, our own commonwealth, our own government and statehood, how we lost it, right? So today we are looking back and seeing the failure, in a sense, of what began in this week's parsha. Okay, what begins in this week's parsha? So if you look at the parsha, you see that Pinchas receives a special commitment by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He becomes a Kohen, and he gets a special bris of Shalom. We're not going to talk about Pinchas in this incident right now. And then the next topic is take revenge on Midian. It's a unique, one of the only times that we're told to take revenge. That these two original, beginning topics we're going to leave on the side. Here comes the next thing. Ve'yomer Hashem el Moshe v'el Elazar ben Aaron HaKohen lemor, this is Perek Chavav, take a census. A census of everybody who is really going to enter in Eretz Yisrael. These are the people that survived the 40 years. The last, as we said, catastrophe, Magefa, plague, is over. Pinchas stopped it by his act of zealousness. These are the survivors. And take a census now. This is the door that's going to enter the land. Okay, so we spend a lot of time listing their tribes, their numbers, their leaders, family by family. This goes all the way through Perek Chavav 26 till Perek Chav Zayin. Okay, here Beno Salafchad come and they ask for an inheritance, and just to stop here for a moment to point something out. Beno Salafchad were women, and they were from Menashe, who was from Yosef. Don't make a mistake. Let's read the psukim carefully. It was not that they were not going to inherit. It had long been established that when there are no sons, the daughters inherit. This is not a new halacha. That's not what happened here. My grandfather points out there was something much deeper going on here. We have a principle that the daughters are yorshin, the daughters inherit. But look at the words here. What are they specifically asking for? Tana lanu achuza, give us a portion, besoch ache avinu, among the brothers of our father. Okay? Now, v'yomar Hashem el Moshe, v'yakrev Moshe's mishpatim lifnei Hashem, we're going to focus on that too. Moshe didn't know what to do, and brings their mishpat in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. This fact that Moshe didn't have an answer for them when the answer was already established that you give daughters a nachala, when there are no sons, implies that there was something new going on here, and Moshe did not know it automatically, which, by the way, is unusual, because Moshe, Rashi tells us, had already told Klal Yisrael, you know, back then, all the hard things bring to me. Remember that? And here, Vayakrev Moshe's Mishpatan, Nisalma Halacha Mimenu, he did not know the Halacha, it kind of like disappeared from him, and this was a little bit of a punishment, that he took a little glory, a little authority, when he had originally said, "V'hadavar asher yikshe michem takrivon alai," whatever's hard, bring to me. Here, in this particular instance, he didn't have an answer. Okay, we'll go back to that. Then Hashem says to Moshe, "Give them a nachala besoch achei avihem in the midst of the brothers of their father. V'havarta es nachlas avihem lahem, and give the nachala of their father to them." Now, this is a little bit of a double lashon, right? Give them a nachala, and let their father's nachala go to them. My grandfather points out here that they were from Menasha. Where did Menasha settle? Half and half. They were getting their portion, me'aver liyarden. They did not want a portion only me'aver liyarden. They wanted a portion in Eretz Yisrael. That was the shaila here. That was their question. They loved Eretz Yisrael. Like Yosef did. Remember he said he was stolen from the land of the Ivrim. He identified himself in Mitzrayim as someone who came from Eretz Yisrael. And Torah says there he loved Eretz Yisrael, and it compares him to Moshe, who they called himself, they referred to him as an Ish Mitzri, the daughters of Tzalafchad. And Yosef made it clear that he was an Ivri. These were his grandchildren. They wanted a Nachla in Eretz Yisrael proper. They did not want to be Michutzla Me'ever Liyarden. Eiver Liyarden did not have Kedushas Eretz Yisrael at that point. It had not been conquered completely, and it was not as Kadosh as the other side. And that was their argument. They loved Eretz Yisrael. So here's an example of a group of people, women from Yosef, who did not want to lose their hold on Eretz Yisrael. As we said, we're now in the 3 weeks. This is when Klal Yisrael did lose their hold on Eretz Yisrael. So here at Kadosh Baruch Hu, the halacha is that they get a nachala there, either exclusively there or in both. That's a machlokas. Okay, but this is the question, and the halacha is established here, and that's the first incident, that they're talking about going into Eretz Yisrael. B'no Salafchad come, and they love Eretz Yisrael, they want a place in Eretz Yisrael. Next, what happens next in the parsha? V'yomar Hashem el Moshe, no, I'm sorry, quick turn. V'yomar Hashem el Moshe, alei el har. I can't even see anymore. I know, it's horrible. Havarim hazeh. Okay, go up on the mountain, and he is going to look around and see the land that he's not going to be able to go into. So this is the end. Moshe's about to die. By the way, you know that all of Sefer Devarim are Moshe's last speeches to Klal Yisrael, which took place in a very short amount of time. This is like the end. This is the end. Moshe's speeches were a few days. This is the end. He's looking at the land. He's not going to be able to enter the land. Here's B'no Salafchad, who love the land, ask for Nachla in two places, get it, but he can't even get into Eretz Yisrael, right? And he accepts this. He accepts this, and then he asks, he realizes that he's going to die. So Vidaber Moshe Hashem Lemor. So he says to Hashem, Yifkod Pasuk Test Zion 16, Yifkod Hashem Elokei Haruchos L'chol Basar Ish Al HaEda. Hashem should please appoint somebody, and he calls him Elokei Haruchas. We're just going to stop on that for a second. God of the spirits, the Ruach. Somebody to lead these people. In other words, he knows he's finished. He's not going to come in Eretz Yisrael, and he asks for HaKadosh Baruch Hu to find a replacement, and he specifically says, Elokei Haruchos. You know, we have spoken about the concept of Ruach. Nefesh, Ruach, and Neshama, right? We've done this a lot. Nefesh is your physical body and all of its drives. Neshama, you know, is your intellect. It lives in your brain, your ability to know what's right and wrong, true and false. Your ability to understand, to receive and understand information, ideas, truths that come from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, reveal truths that you wouldn't necessarily figure out on your own. And your Ruach is in the middle. That's your passion, your emotion, your drive, your ambition. That is different in every single person. Every single person pretty much has the same physical makeup and the same physical drives. Every single person is given an intellect to understand to some degree or another the Torah. The more you try, the more you succeed. What's completely different in every person is their initiative, their passions, what they care about, what they're going to devote themselves to, what they're going to sacrifice for, what they find, that what personally drives them and appeals to them. That's an individual thing. And that's going to determine how the person blends the body and the soul. What the body wants and what the soul wants is going to be determined in that particular person by their Ruach. So what he was asking from HaKadosh Baruch Hu was a leader who was insightful enough, intuitive enough, and given by HaKadosh Baruch Hu a special gift like Moshe was given on behalf of the people that he was leading, the ability to see and perceive and be intuitive to every person's Ruach, individuality, the inner invisible part of the person that drives them, their feelings and the way things affect them and the way they see the world and their particular individuality. That's what a leader needs to be. Ideally, a leader should have that talent automatically, but when you're chosen to lead Klal Yisrael by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Hashem has to give you an enormous extra measure of this ability, right? Because you're dealing with, a huge nation, each one separate person. So he's asking HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Elokei Haruchos, God of all the spirits, of the Ruach, in each and every person, pick somebody that will lead them. And Hashem told him, Kach Lachas Yeshua Ben Nun. So again, this is the end. Take someone else who's going to go into Eretz Yisrael instead of you, and anoint him, etc. V'nasata Mehodcha Perikchaf. V'nasata Mehodcha Alav, and you will give of your Hod. Remember we talked about Hod? Hod and Hadar, which always go together. Just review for a second again. What is Moshe conferring, really, onto Yeshua? So they compare it to a candle. You take there's a candle burning. You light another candle off the first candle. It doesn't diminish the first candle at all. It just lights up the second one. Moshe is giving his Hod. Hod is a particular kind of beauty. We talked about this Hanukkah time. Hod is from the word, is really the shorish of the word modem, when you bow. The particular beauty of Klal Yisrael, and particularly a leader, must be that a leader cannot be, not a leader of Klal Yisrael, cannot be in it for self-serving reasons, for glory, for covet. That is not their role. They are there to serve the people, and in order to serve the people, they must have Hod. Hod is the ability to submit, modim, to bow, to acknowledge, like Hoda'ah, acknowledge your role and be grateful for your role, no matter how hard your role is. The first person to give Hoda'ah, remember the Chazal say, is Leah. And everybody asks, how is that possible? Avraham, Noach, Adam, Leah is the first person to give Hoda'ah. My grandfather says, no, she gave Hoda'ah by naming her fourth child Yehuda. That was her Hoda'ah. But look at how unique her Hoda'ah is, right? I hope this sounds a little familiar. What did Leah really want? She wanted Yaakov's love, attachment, but he loved Rachel. That's the fact. He loved Rachel more than he loved Leah. Not chas v'sholom that Yaakov mistreated Leah, but he didn't love her as much as he loved Rachel. And by the way, just to love someone a little less is pure pain and torture. Imagine telling your child, I love you, I just love your sister a little more. Okay, that doesn't work. It doesn't work. That's why it says, Ra Hashem, Hashem saw that she was snua, that she was hated, because to her, that's being hated. Anyway. So, not that anyone else saw, Hashem saw, right? So, she named her first child Ra'a Hashem Ba'ani, Hashem has seen my suffering, right? Then she says, Shama Hashem, Hashem has heard my cry. Then she named her kid, that's Shimon. The first one is Reuven, Ra'a Hashem Ba'ani. The second one is Shimon, Shama Hashem, Hashem has heard. The third one is Levi, maybe now my husband will be Milaveh me, will accompany me like a partner. Nothing, it didn't work. Proof it didn't work, that after she had Yehuda, after Rachel died, Yaakov moved his tent, his bed into Bilhah's tent, which made Reuven very upset, and that whole incident took place. But the fact is, she didn't get what she wanted. She recognized at the birth of Yehuda that she was not going to get what she wanted. Right? She wasn't going to get that bond, that connection with Yaakov that Rachel had. So she named him Yehuda, which means she gives Hodah to HaKadosh Baruch Hu for the role she plays and the situation as it is, despite the fact that it's not what she wanted. That's Hodah. So, that's certainly the role of Moshe Rabbeinu. When you're a leader of Klal Yisrael and you've been chosen and given a great degree of nevuah and a great degree of understanding the ruach of a person and a great amount of an unusual existence has been you know, to exist on a completely unusual level, half malach, half human. When this is bestowed upon a human being on behalf of Klal Yisrael, and for that he has to separate from his wife, and he doesn't live a normal life, and he's always under threat by Klal Yisrael, not always, but in, you know, those crisis situations. And he's always putting his life on the line for Klal Yisrael. Again and again, you're completely devoted to the Klal. And that's Hod. Hod is the beauty that comes from submitting to a greater truth, a greater good. Hod is when a human, on an individual level, the beauty of Hod, as in Modim, bowing, is when a human being who knows that they have, as we said, a neshama and a body, and in between, a lot of emotion and passion and drive and initiative and desire for all kinds of things, you know, and enthusiasm, all of those, you know, all those emotions that drive us. When a person submits to the neshama, they put everything under the sovereignty, so to speak, the rule of what the neshama says is right and true and good, and they bow to that and conduct their lives according to that and not according to their initial, you know, natural inclination, that is called hod. It's a form of beauty where the neshama becomes dominant. Now, the neshama in a person is invisible. That is totally true. But the effects of a neshama that is allowed to be dominant, right, the effect of the neshama on a person is not invisible. After many years, after a life of hod, of the beauty of letting the neshama speak first, that becomes visible in the hadras panim of the person's face. That's why hod v'hadar go together. Hadar is the end result of the hod. It's called hadras panim, the glow on the face of purity, of goodness, of self-sacrifice, and of devotion to a greater good, and of humility, and of love for your fellow man, and of keeping your eye on the big picture. That's hadras panim, hod and hadar. So here, what Moshe is giving to Yeshua in the same concept of the ruach, Elokei Rucha, so Yeshua should know the ruach of each person and should serve each person, that is the hod, the beauty. Now we know Moshe's face shone with such a hadras panim that they had to put a mask on it. Remember that? It was, you couldn't even look at it. It was a glow to that degree. Now this is what he's conferring to Yeshua. His greatness, he's transferring to Yeshua. Okay? So he doesn't, Tzlafchad, B'no Tzlafchad are going in because they love Eretz Yisrael. Yeshua's going in. He's not going in. He's looking around. And then HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Perek Chav Ches, says to Moshe, Tzav es B'nei Yisrael, command B'nei Yisrael. And here we begin the entire parsha of the Olos, right, the daily burnt offering, the Musafim, the extra additional Karbanos of the Tamidim, we call it, rather, they're called Tamidim, the daily offering, the Musafim, the additional offering of Shabbos and Yantiv, and the Karbanos of the Nidarim, when people make a vow to bring a Karban, is all of a sudden inserted here. Our question is why? Why is this here? Right, we're about to talk about the transition from Moshe to Yeshua, Klal Yisrael from the Midbar to Eretz Yisrael. all of a sudden you have the halachas of to the Tamid, the Musaf, and the Nedarim. We'll answer this question as soon as we finish laying out the pattern. This takes up all of Perek Kaf Ches pretty much. And by the way, this is what you read on the Musaf Shmona Esrei in the Regolim and the Yom Tovim. You read from Pinchas about the Tamidim and the Musafim. And then when you're done with this, the last Pasuk, V'yomer Moshe el b'nei Yisrael kachol acher tziva Hashem es Moshe. And look at the last Rashi in Pinchas. The last Rashi in Pinchas says, V'yomer Moshe el b'nei Yisrael lahafzik ha'inyan, to like create a divider, divrei Rabbi Yishmol. What is the rule here? Lefisha ad kan devarav shel makom. That's it. Till here is Hashem's words. From here on in, it's Moshe. This is up to the point here. Hashem spoke to Moshe to tell B'nai Yisrael everything that we've learned from this point and backwards. From this point on, starting in the next parsha, through the whole Sefer Devarim, it's Devarav Shel Moshe. It's Moshe's words to Klal Yisrael. He's about to die, and he needs to speak to them before he goes, to encourage them, to inspire them, to warn them. Shema Yisrael is in Devarim. A lot of things that we're very familiar with are in Devarim. Ad Kan Devarav Shel Makom. So now we're beginning to see, it's not just that Klal Yisrael are transferring to Eretz Yisrael without Moshe, and that Yeshua is going to take over, and Moshe's job is coming to an end, and he's giving his goodbye speeches. Something else is changing. From here on in, it's Devarav Shel Moshe. It's Moshe's words. Now, the fact that it's included in the Torah means that every word was considered acceptable by HaKadosh Baruch Hu and completely part and parcel of the purpose of the Torah, and therefore was included. But these words were initiated by Moshe. So what that means is HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not telling Moshe what to say anymore. So there's a much bigger transition going on here than just Moshe switching roles with Yeshua and Klal Yisrael switching roles from the Midbar to Eretz Yisrael. Hashem stops speaking to Moshe here, directly telling him what to tell Klal Yisrael. It's over. All the revelation has been revealed. Whatever Hashem wanted to say through Moshe has been said. Now what happens? Now the Jewish people have to live by what they've learned all these 40 years. This Dor has to come into Eretz Yisrael with Yeshua, who's not like Moshe, who's not going to receive the same degree of Nevuah as Moshe, and who's not going to reveal Torah to Klal Yisrael like Moshe. It's all been done. Hashem is finished, in a sense, setting Klal Yisrael up with everything they need to know to live in Eretz Yisrael. And from here on in, it's Devarav Shel Moshe. So what we're seeing here is, as the Maharal says, a much bigger transition takes place. And that's what the 3 weeks are about, much, much later in history. We stand here today, we see what happened between then and here. The Maharal says there are really the first four Sfarim and the last Sefer, which is Devarim plus the end here, Matos and Maaseh. The first four Sfarim, everything we hear about, everything that is conveyed to us, comes from the perspective of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Nosein, the giver of Torah. Hashem breaks open the heavens, speaks to Klal Yisrael, speaks to Moshe, and Moshe records it forever. From this point on, the Maharal says, everything you're going to hear comes from our perspective. It's us having integrated, understood everything Hashem has taught us, and now we are expressing those same ideas, but they start from us. We initiate them. So when Moshe speaks from here on in, and the whole Sefer Dvarim, Eilah HaDvarim Asher Diber Moshe, it is exactly what we've received, processed, and now we are expressing, but from our perspective. So it's, for example, the classic example is Shema Yisrael, right? You may remember this? When we say every day, Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad, that's Moshe's words in Devarim. Moshe's reminding them what they heard from HaKadosh Baruch Hu on Har Sinai. Shema Yisrael is really a reiteration from our perspective of the first two Dibros. Hashem said, Anochi Hashem Elokecha. We say, Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu. Hashem said, Lo Yelecha Elohim Acherim. You should not have other gods. We say, Hashem Echad. There's only one. It's us saying the same thing. It's two sides of one same coin, but it's coming from us. The Maharal says everything from this point on is mitzad hamekabel. It represents the perspective of the receiver, which is exactly the same perspective as the giver. But now it's in our hands. So we've spoken about this theme in the past, that throughout Jewish history, there's been a slow transition. Well, here is when it starts precisely in this pasuk. We said that first Hashem treats Klal Yisrael as a father treats a child, or a mother treats a little child, doing everything for them, protecting them, fighting for them, instructing them, everything. They sit back and let somebody bigger, stronger, take care of all their needs, responsibilities. That's Klal Yisrael's existence up till this point. Then Hashem slowly puts the ball in our court more and more and more until it's completely and totally in our court, which is where we stand right now. And that's why you see first they go into Eretz Yisrael. The first beginnings of this transition is no one's going to have Nevuah like Moshe. Hashem is never going to speak again like he spoke up till this point. Right? They're going to move out of the Midbar into Eretz Yisrael, which is a more natural existence. It's the beginning of the transition. But then they still have a base of Migdash and prophecy and miracles and everything. But then slowly, by the Chorban Bais Rishon, the base of Migdash is taken away, it's rebuilt, but it's never the same. We never have an Aron. We never have the Luchos again that were in the Aron, the broken Luchos and the second Luchos. The Aron is gone in the second base of Migdash. There's no Urim Batumim that lit up and that the Kohen wore on the breastplate, the name of Hashem behind the breastplate. No more in the second base of Migdash. No more prophecy, it goes away. No more miracles in the temple that were normal, regular in the first base of Migdash. But we still had Eretz Yisrael, and we still had Kohanim, and we still had Leviim, and we still had the base of Migdash. We still had autonomy in Eretz Yisrael, right? But then that's taken away. And now look where we are. We have none of it. Zero. So the beginning of this transition begins right here. Right here is beginning the Tzad HaMekabel, our side. What happens is HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not slowly throughout Jewish history abandoning us. That is not what's happening. This is the normal process of a nation like a human being that goes from infancy to childhood to, teenage, adult, young adult, mature, old age. That's what is happening to Klal Yisrael. This is the very beginning of the mother letting go of the child's hands, right? And HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not that he's abandoning us. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is putting more and more responsibility in our hands, beginning right here. With this understanding, we see why the Karbanos, the whole section of the Karban Tamid, the Ola, the Musafim, and the Nedarim are inserted right here, right before this transition. What do these three types of Karbanos have in common? Well, you know, the Ola is from Klal Yisrael. It's built by the communal funds of Klal Yisrael. Everyone had to give a chatzi shekel, right, to buy the Karbanos, so that when the Ola, which was completely burned, was offered, it represented all of Klal Yisrael. And we've spoken about this just now, right, with the Mincha and the Nesachim a couple of weeks ago, that the Ola, to die al Kiddush Hashem, to completely sacrifice your entire life force, that's the mushal of the animal being completely burned. That is, of course, an aspiration for a Jew to be able to do that. But beyond that, we said, is living, devoting a person's life continuously to the same cause. So here is added the olos, that sacrifice to HaKadosh Baruch Hu that comes from the people, represents the devotion of the people. The Karban Musaf. What is Musaf? Musaf is additional offerings for Shabbos and Yontif. By the way, Yosef, additional. There's a theme going on here. Bnos Salafchad were from Yosef. Musafim relate to Yosef, and Yoshua was from Yosef, right? Yosef is the koach, and we've spoken about this in the past, of a desire. Remember Yosef in Mitzrayim, no prophecy, Hashem not speaking to him, banished by his family. He desired to stay connected to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and that's what held him on. That's what held him strong. Remember Rashi tells us he always said, Baruch Hashem, Hashem will help, Hashem this, Hashem will interpret your dreams. He had no reason to hold on. There was no Klal Yisrael yet. He was one brother banished from all the other brothers. He could have assimilated into Egyptian society and be done with it. He refused to sever his connection to his father's house, even though they had severed it seemed. And he stayed strong, and he held himself out against assimilation and against intermarriage. That's Yosef. He added more, and it came from himself, and that's Bnos Salafchad. And that is why Yeshua was chosen. Yeshua was not Moshe's child. What did Yeshua do? He went and attached himself to Moshe, and he never left his side, and he was a shamus. He apprenticed. He was devoted completely to Moshe, did every single thing for Moshe. This came from his own initiative. He was never chosen. You see Yeshua ever being chosen to be Moshe's helper? There's no such, he doesn't show up in Chumash. Yeshua did this on his own. So B'nai Yosef, by the way, a separate theme, show a unique desire to reach for more. The concept of Musafim is associated with this top idea, and Nidarim are when a person makes a free-willed vow to give a korban to HaKadosh Baruch Hu that comes from themselves out of gratitude, out of love, out of thanksgiving. It's not for a sin. It's not one of the. It's not a korban Pesach that you have to bring. It's something you just want to show your desire and your devotion to be close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's these halachas stuck in right here. Because now that the beginning of the separation is starting, what is going to hold Klal Yisrael together if they don't have Moshe, and they don't have the miraculous life of the man and the whale and the whole thing in the Midbar, what is going to hold Klal Yisrael connected to their Father in Heaven? Their own desire to follow their leaders, to listen to the people Hashem sends them, to Yeshua and the prophets, to come to the Beis HaMikdash, to give their own free-willed offerings, right? It comes from inside Klal Yisrael. What's happening here is once the child, is let loose, set free, the only way that child will have a connection to their parents is they desire it. That's the beginning of what's happening here. So when we get into all of these various portions in Pinchas that talk about this change, you get these specific laws stuck in here. They could have been back in Emor, in Vayikra, where we talked about all the Yom Tovim and all the mitzvahs of the Yom Tovim, and it even mentions the Karbanos back in Emor. But they're put here instead, not in Vayikra, but in the middle of Bamidbar, because they represent what Klal Yisrael need to ensure, that will help them stay connected. Now, the Rashi brings that down. When Moshe says to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, pick somebody who's going to lead the nation. Look in Perek Chavches, Pasuk Beis, Tzavis B'nei Yisrael, when Hashem starts giving them the commandments of the Karbanos. So it says, above, right before this, Hashem had asked for a leader that would lead Klal Yisrael. Amar lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So Hashem said to Moshe, Ad Shata Metzaveni Al Banai, before you command me about leading my children, save asbanai alai, command my children about me, that they shouldn't rebel against me. And then Hashem gives the all the halachas of karbanos. So Moshe says, pick someone. Hashem says, that's not the most critical thing now, to pick a leader. What's more critical now is Klal Yisrael should have a mechanism to remain connected to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Because they will not necessarily listen to a leader. No leader will ever again be like Moshe Rabbeinu. No one will ever be able to be, do the miracles Moshe did, teach them Torah like Moshe. So it's not about giving them another Moshe. That's never going to happen again. Now what happens is command them about me, that they must stay connected. So that's how it all starts. We are now in the time period where this transition, we begin to look back and say, well, maybe it didn't go so well. Hashem gave us all this responsibility to go in and build a society that will represent the Kadosh Baruch Hu, and we did it for a while, but then we lost, our enthusiasm for it. We started assimilating, we started being distracted, and we lost it all, and here we are in Golus. So this transition is fraught with risk. Putting the responsibility in Klal Yisrael's hand is fraught with risk, no question about it. Where do you see the risk really demonstrating itself? So the Mishnah in Tanis, the last Mishnah in Tanis tells you in the Mishnayis, in the section of Tanis of all the fasts, the last three Mishnayis tell you about what happened after HaKadosh Baruch Hu, gave us this responsibility. Well, we weren't necessarily, always able to live up to it. And when we failed, interestingly enough, those failures somehow always happened on Shivasar Batamas. What are these five things that happened on Shivasar Batamas that the Mishnah tells us? And everybody will tell you, yes, we know what happened on Shivasar Batamas. The walls were breached. However, that is not what the Mishnah says. The Mishnah lists five things that never says the walls were breached. The Mishnah says the following. Five things happened on Shavuot Batamas, five catastrophes, and five things happen on Tisha B'Av. Here are the five things on Shavuot Batamas. Nishtabru haluchos. The first luchos were broken. All right, that's Shavuot Batamas. That was in response to Chet HaEgel. That was also, again, the Klal Yisrael had a little bit of responsibility in their hands just to wait for Moshe. And it happens to be that it was on Shavuot Batamas that they made a mistake about that, right? Now look at the next thing. Batal HaTamid. The carbon tamid was nullified. That is very relevant to this week's parsha because I want you to look here at where HaKadosh Baruch Hu says Sab et es b'nei Yisrael again. Perek Chav Ches. Look at Pasuk Zayin. What is the official name of the carbon HaTamid? Olas Tamid Ha'asuya Bahar Sinai. That's the official long name of the carbon Tamid, the daily offering that was burned. It's called Olas Tamid, the continual offering. Ha'asuya Bahar Sinai. That's its name. In other words, on Shavasur Batamos, when it says the carbon Tamid was nullified, what that means is that on the day of Matan Torah, they started bringing their first national carbon on behalf of the whole nation, which was fully burnt, the Ola. And every single day in the history of the Jewish people's existence, until the 17th of Tammuz of the destruction of the first temple, almost 1,000 years later, that continual offering was brought. And for the first time that it stopped being, well, no, 1,000 is too much. It's close to, but eight, more like 800. The first time in all those years that the Tamid was nullified. Nullified means, although we started bringing it again in the Second Temple, it was no longer continuous back to Sinai. There was a huge break in the continuation of it. So that continuous offering for the first time came to an end on Shavuot Batamas. The next thing that happened on Shavuot Batamas, and this sounds like the breaching of the walls, but it's not what the Mishnah says. Huvka Ha'ir. The city was, what? What is the shorish of Huvka? Eshayam Bakata, same shorish, Beis Kofayin, split, divided. The city was divided. What is that? Rav Shapiro explains that there were so many things that connected Klal Yisrael to the events of Har Sinai. One was the first luchos, which were broken, but we had the second luchos. The Tamid, and the way they camped in the Midbar, which was then reenacted in Eretz Yisrael. Beis HaMikdash in the middle, Kohanim around it, Levium around them, and then Yisrael. That's exactly how they camped and traveled, and that was reenacted in Eretz Yisrael. And for the first time in 800 years, they didn't live like that, set up in that order, and never again to be established like that. Even in the Second Temple, that's not how they lived. So what we're saying about Shavuot Batamas, and we'll go on, is nothing to do with the destruction of Eretz Yisrael, as you see. It has to do with a destruction of the Jewish consciousness of who they were from the very beginning, how they, you know, how they, their connection to Har Sinai. The constant, like, kind of a continuation of the events of Har Sinai and their life in the Midbar. That whole concept existed. Their life in the Midbar was kind of transferred over to Eretz Yisrael through the Talmud, through the way the city and the set up. Furthermore, Apostomus burned a Sefer Torah. It's nothing to do with Chorban of Eretz Yisrael. Apostomus was a Greek, time of the Second Temple. Now, unfortunately, we're used to the that type of violation, that type of atrocity of our Sfarim being burned. Not anymore, but certainly all through the Middle Ages, and maybe even now in some countries. But it was the first time anyone had that audacity to burn a Sefer Torah, to disgrace a Sefer Torah, which the whole world revered and understood to be the word, the Book of Hashem. And the first time Menashe, the first Beis HaMikdash, and some say even Apostomus in the second, put a image, a pesel, in the Heichal, in the Mikdash itself, which is a violation of Anochi Hashem, the first Dibra, and Lo Yelecha, don't have other gods. So everything that happens on Shavuot Batamas, okay, represents that what we experienced on Har Sinai, Anochi Hashem, Lo Yelecha, the Torah that came directly from Hashem through Moshe, the Tamid, the organization of our cities, all of the things that connected us to our life in the Midbar, were severed, these things were interfered with, were disrupted on Shavuos or B'Tammuz. So here HaKadosh Baruch Hu is sending us into Eretz Yisrael, hoping that we will transfer, continue our life in the Midbar in Eretz Yisrael, and when we can't and when we don't, Shavuos or B'Tammuz is the day that those type, the events of those days represent that disconnect, unfortunately, from the Midbar, from our original existence. Then later, of course, if we're not connected to the Torah, and in its pristine form, and the living emuna, like they lived in the Midbar with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you know, with Hashem giving them food and water, eventually, if we can't live like that, we lose Eretz Yisrael. Everybody knows that Eretz Yisrael is conditional on Klal Yisrael keeping the Torah and being connected to Har Sinai and what we received at Har Sinai. So here in this week's Parsha, Ad Kan Devarav Shel Makom, till here is Hashem's words. Don't worry about who's going to lead them. Tell them to give me karbanos. Right? Tzlafcha said, no, b'nos lachud, we want in. Moshe, you're not going in. You know, you're giving your hod. And to you. All of this is Hashem setting Klal Yisrael up to exist and hold on to the levels they achieved in the Midbar. But when Klal Yisrael don't hold on to it, guess when you're going to notice that? You're going to notice it on Shavuos or B'Tammuz. And then Tisha B'Av is going to be when, which of course is the Meraglim, the Chorban Tu Batei Mikdash, Beitar was conquered and they plowed the city with salt. That's the actual loss of Eretz Yisrael. If you really want to think about it like this, Har Sinai was the marriage between Hashem and Klal Yisrael. And the Luchos were the Ksuva. So the Ksuva was ripped up, so to speak. And then Tisha B'Av, which is just a few weeks later, is when you're kicked out of the house. So first the marriage is, you know, kind of disbanded, and then you're kicked out of the house. Right. However, stop. We know that we never get divorced from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And we're never eternally kicked out of the house. Right? That never happens. It's all temporary. We might lose our connection to Har Sinai, but don't worry, we are assured that we will regain it again. We might lose Eretz Yisrael because there's a risk when Hashem puts the responsibility in our hands. We don't always do well. So we might lose Eretz Yisrael, but don't worry, we're going to get it again. And that's why, without going into the whole text of the very, very last Mishnah in Tanis, but just focusing on one aspect of it, the last Mishnah says there were no happier days in Eretz Yisrael than Yom Kippur and Tu B'Av. Okay? That has nothing to do with Tanesim. It's like the last Mishnah thrown in an entire, you know, Masechta, really, that deals with four parshios, four prakim of Tanesim. And here comes, this is about Yom Kippur and Tu B'Av were the happiest days. So, the Mishnah explains, Yom Kippur was considered a happy day, we know, because that was the giving of the second Luchos. That was a tikkun on Shavuos or B'Tammuz, the breaking of the Luchos, the Chet HaEgel, the destruction of what we experienced at that first Kabbalah Satorah. Don't worry, Yom Kippur is a tikkun. And Tu B'Av, and we've talked about this here, is a tikkun on losing Eretz Yisrael and losing the Beis HaMikdash. And why Tu B'Av and not Tisha B'Av? We always think that Tisha B'Av is the holiday of the future when the Beis HaMikdash will be rebuilt. We've done this a lot, but just in a nugget, yes, it's true, Tisha B'Av, the Beis HaMikdash will be rebuilt, but it goes through a 7-day Chanukah Sabayis, a dedication period. On the 7th day, we start offering karbanos. We start the actual service in the Beis HaMikdash. We, you know, we actually, you know, it actually starts existing as, you know, functioning completely. That's 7 days later, that's Tu B'Av. So the Mishnah says there were no happier days in Yom Kippur because that was a tikkun on the Merag, on the Egel, and on everything that happened on Shavuos or B'Tammuz, and we can regain our, if we lose our connection to Torah, to our life in the Midbar, to the pure revelation that we received, we'll get it back again. That was represented by Yom Kippur. If you lose Eretz Yisrael, you lose the Beis HaMikdash, you're going to get it back again. Not only get your Beis HaMikdash, it's going to function as it always functioned, you're going to get it back again. How were these days celebrated in Klal Yisrael? The dancing, the Shidduchim, because really, it's a remarriage. It's a remarriage between Hashem and Klal Yisrael. But what I want to focus on now is when the girls would go out and dance, they would quote a particular pasuk from Shir HaShirim. They quoted a few pasukim the Mishnah brings down, Sheker Achein Behevel Hayofi, from Shlomo HaMelech, don't look at beauty, look at Yichus, the spiritual, you know, moral, ethical value of the person and their family. They quoted a few pasukim when they danced. These, I guess, were the songs they sang as they danced, or that the band or whatever played, right? And by the way, my grandfather says, only on Yom Kippur, and Tuba'av, which represent the tikkun on these chatoim, can you celebrate like this? Because everyone, once we do tikkun on these two great sins, of the Egel and the Meraglim, which really mean for us our loss of devotion to Hashem, and therefore our loss of commitment to Eretz Yisrael. When you do tikkun and we're on a madrega that we deserve both back, everybody is purified, and in a pure state you can have such a celebration. If you're not in a pure state, you don't attempt such a thing, because the Yetzer Hara kicks in. But if everybody is pure, like they were on Yom Kippur, and when they were real, it's really talking about the future, when we would get the Beis HaMikdash back and hear Hashem again speak to us as He spoke to us the first time, that madrega will be so purified. These are no issues. By the way, we know that not only will the Beis HaMikdash be rebuilt, and there'll be a tikkun Hashem will give us back once again everything we lost, the land, the temple, and all parts of its service, the Kohanim, the Levium, the music, the Kalim, the whole thing. But when we talk about Yom Kippur, that's also talking about a future Matan Torah that will happen again. Remember on Purim they accepted the Torah once again? That's a glimpse into the future. There will be, in the end of days, a reaccepting of the Torah once again, another Matan Torah. And that's what we say every Shabbos in Musaf, in Kedusha. B'hu yashmienu sheinith. What does that mean? He'll let us hear again, a second time. Ani Hashem Elokeichem. We're asking for a second Har Sinai experience. That's exactly what we're talking about. That'll happen again, and that won't be in jeopardy of being lost. The Beis HaMikdash will come back, and we won't lose it. So they celebrated these days by Shaduchim, because it's really reunion of the marriage and coming back into the home between Hashem and Klal Yisrael. And here's the pasuk they quoted. Tzena ure'ena benos Yerushalayim. It's from Shir HaShirim Perek Gimel Pasuk Yud Aleph. Go out and see benos, I'm sorry, Tzena ure'ena benos Tzion. Go out and see daughters of Tzion. Be'atara, be'melech Shlomo. Go see Melech Shlomo. Be'atara she'itra lo imo. Go see the crown that his mother crowned him with. Be'om chasunoso, on the day of his chasna, his wedding. Be'om simchas libo, on the day of the rejoicing and the happiness of his heart. The Mishnah says, no, let's read this further. Go see King Shlomo and the crown he got on his wedding day and on his happy day. What does this mean? This is all allegorical. No, Yom Chasanoso, that his wedding day means Matan Torah. Yom Simchas Libo, his joyous day, the day of the joy of his heart, Zebinyan Beis HaMikdash Yabana Bimheira Bimeno. The Mishnah is talking about the third Beis HaMikdash. That's the building of the third Beis HaMikdash. You should have some very basic questions. Go see Shlomo HaMelech and the crown that his mother crowned him at Matan Torah, which, if we're referring to the previous one, he wasn't alive. If we're referring to the future one, when we receive the Torah, we're talking about Tchias HaMesim. And go see his joyous day when the Beis HaMikdash will be rebuilt, which hasn't happened yet. So go see the crown his mother crowned him with in the future, when we have Matan Torah for the second time, and build the Beis HaMikdash, b'mheira b'yameinu. So, what are we talking about here? So, we know that Shlomo HaMelech wrote Shir HaShirim. And when he talks about HaMelech Shlomo, he is not talking about himself. It's all allegorical. Melech Shlomo is HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Melech Shahashalom Shelo. The king that peace is his. When the Shir HaShirim calls him Melech Shlomo, it's talking about HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Now it gets even harder. Go see Melech Shlomo, God, Hashem, and see the crown that his mother crowned him with at Matan Torah, and we could either be the last, the previous, or the future, and the Beis HaMikdash when it will be rebuilt. So in order to make any sense of this, you need Chazal, who tell us that, yes, Kala Hashem has a mother. And we referred to this already earlier in the class. And who is the mother of Kala Yisrael? We are. Now what does that mean? Says like this. Okay. Rav Shimon bar Yochai asked Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Yossi, perhaps you heard from your father what the meaning of this is, ba'atara she'itra lo imo, the crown that his mother crowned him with. Do you have any? What did you know? What's the tradition? What have you heard? What does this mean? So he replied. All right. So Rabbi Elazar replied, this is a parable of a king who had an only daughter, of whom he was very fond. He could not stop loving her. I'm going to read it in the English. Until he called her my daughter. He was looking for a way to express his love for her. He called her my daughter, as it is said in Tehillim, Perek 45. Listen, my daughter, and see. He calls Klal Yisrael Biti, my daughter. Then he could not stop loving her and looking for a way to express his love until he called her my sister, and he quotes from Shir HaShirim, Achosi Rayasi, my sister, my beloved. Open for me, my sister, my beloved, open the door. He couldn't stop loving her. He loved her even more. He was looking for a way to express this love until he called her my mother, and he quotes from Yeshayahu, listen, my people, my nation, and the word my nation is Le'umi, and Chazal say, don't read it, Le'umi, my nation, read it, Le'imi, my mother. Rav Shimon Bar Yochai stood up, kissed him on the head, and said, if I'd only come into this world to hear this, it would have been sufficient. What is this? So what's happening here is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu refers to Klal Yisrael as my daughter, my sister, and my mother. We spoke about this. This is the transition. First Klal Yisrael, up until the last Pasuk in Pinchas, are my daughter. Completely Hashem does everything for Klal Yisrael. Starting now, Devarav Shel Moshe, he starts transferring responsibility to Klal Yisrael to go into Eretz Yisrael, as we said, set up a country, a life, without that type of that Madrega of Nevuah, with Yeshua, without Moshe, right? And speak for themselves, show their devotion to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. This whole period is my sister, begins to be my sister. It's between my daughter. Still, there's a lot of Nisim, a lot of revelation, a lot of prophecy, a lot. So it's the daughter becoming sister. Sister is more equal. It's also Achosi Rayasi, my wife, my beloved. It's an equal partnership. Slowly, the relationship transfers with Klal Yisrael, begin to take more and more responsibility, kind of equal to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to bring the revelation of Hashem to this world. It's no more Hashem alone, like a child. We do it too. Where do you see this? From their entrance into Eretz Yisrael, even though they're still like a young child becoming, growing up, but by the Hanukkah story, where Klal Yisrael don't sit back and accept HaKadosh Baruch Hu to just expect Hashem to fight their battles, but they go out and they take losses. Right? They take losses, and they even Chashmonaim die. And they fight for who they are, their chosenness and their role in this world. And Hashem helps them. Hashem makes that candle burn, shows them I'm there with you, but doesn't fight for them. That's really like Klal Yisrael transitioning into a mature equal, so to speak, to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because they take the responsibility of everything that Hashem taught, attempted to bring to Klal Yisrael and teach Klal Yisrael in the beginning by opening the heavens and giving Torah and doing great miracles. Now Klal Yisrael have integrated that, and they are living for it, living by it, and teaching it to the world through their own sacrifice. But then we lose everything. We don't even have Eretz Yisrael for 2,000 years. We don't even have a Beis Hamikdash, not even the second Beis Hamikdash. We don't have even a little nace like the Pach HaShemen and the candle burning. Okay, not everybody saw it. A few Kohanim saw it, but at least there was something. Right? We lose everything. Then begins the era of my mother. Now we play the role of my mother. The mother speaks on behalf of the child. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not abandoning us. Hashem is trusting us to do the job. That starts with the Churban Bayis Sheni till this second. So, we are like the mother of Klal Yisrael. We crown HaKadosh Baruch Hu. In other words, if Hashem will be known in this world, if Hashem will have kavod in this world crowned, who's it going to come from? If not Klal Yisrael, not Hashem, and certainly not the other nations. It's going to only come from Klal Yisrael. That's the role of the mother crowning HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So here we're beginning to see the beginning of the transition from my little baby child to my adolescent, slowly to my equal, and as we said now, to my mother. So we said in the beginning, so what if, that transition is fraught with danger? Because when you give so much authority, responsibility to us as we mature, we have to be able to live up to it. So what if we don't? Well, the 3 weeks is when we don't. But the last Mishnah in Tana says, so even if you don't live up to it and you lose that connection to Har Sinai, that what you remember being the child of HaKadosh Baruch Hu and everything being taken care of, right? So we always try to feel like every person wants to go back to their childhood when no responsibilities and a parent did everything for them, right? when we are encouraged here by the last Mishnah in Tanis, if you lose your connection, right, you stray so far from that early life of being the daughter of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and now when you're supposed to be playing the role of the mother, you know, you're not necessarily playing the role, and then you lose Eretz Yisrael for it, and you lose, and the nations come up against you, and what they do to you just teaches you what your sin is, really, that you're losing that connection. Don't worry, you will regain it. There will be another Matan Torah in the future. There'll be a Binyan Bayis Shlishi in the future. There'll be a reunion. There'll be a remarriage between Hashem and Klal Yisrael. It will come back to you. And on those 2 days, the wedding day, that's the future Matan Torah, the Binyan Bayis Shlishi, you know what's going to happen on those 2 days? You, Klal Yisrael, playing the role of the mother of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, will just take heart. You will succeed in crowning HaKadosh Baruch Hu. This is a nevuah for the future. Senevra and a Benosian, go out and see the crown. Go see Melech Shlomo, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Go see the crown that his mother, Klal Yisrael, crowned him with and will crown him with. Yom Chasenoso, the day of his marriage, that's Matan Torah, the next one. And the day of his joy of his heart, that's Binyan Bayis Shlishi B'mheira B'yameinu. We will succeed in crowning HaKadosh Baruch Hu through our survival, through our existence as Jews, through our perseverance. But now we're being told exactly what it needs. It needs a reconnection to our commitment at Harsinai, and that will allow us back in Eretz Yisrael. And the union of the two will be, you know, that great wedding day of the future. And I just want to tell you, it's just a note here. With all the politics, I'm not getting into it. The Haredim don't join the army, whatever it is. But what they do with a vengeance, because that's how they see this, they do kiruv. They try to bring as many secular Jews as they can back to Torah, to the basics of Torah at least, Shabbos and Kashrus and Yom Kippur and Harish, because they believe, and we all believe, that if we reconnect to what we committed to in Har Sinai, then we will have Eretz Yisrael. Hashem will give it to us. So that's they have an army, make no mistake about it, of kiruv workers. They really do. There are tons of, from people are out there in Lev La'achim and Pe'ilim and Tzili Schneider's organization that she's been here. The from people are very motivated in this way in Eretz Yisrael. Okay. Question. Yeah, have a wonderful week, everybody.